All right. Look at that. Thank you. Okay. So last Sunday, in case you weren't here, last Sunday, four of the five elders shared on three words that really capture the vision of Living Hope Community Church. So this wasn't really in my notes, but let's have a test. Who can tell me what the first word was? I caught you, didn't I? You're like, oh my goodness, that was a whole week ago. There were three words. What was the first word? Come on, somebody's going to remember. Loved. The first word is loved. The second word was transformed. And the third word was sent. Love, transform, sent. So if you missed that, I'd really encourage you to find that on our podcast, on our website. So you'll be able to hear that when we spoke about those three words. What I'd like to do this morning is return to our Freedom series and to what's been, I think, a very necessary but at times difficult portion of this series. Two Sundays ago, when we were at Central Manor Camp Meeting, I brought the second message on shame. The Sunday before that was the first message out of Genesis 1. Then at camp meeting, I brought just kind of some practical parts to that, I thought. And a trusted friend after camp meeting said to me, Ron, you should just preach that sermon again. We need to hear it again. So I'm not entirely doing that, but I am going back and I'm going to review the things that I shared at camp meeting. And then we're going to add a personal testimony this morning, and then I'm going to get on my soapbox a little bit on Genesis 2 again. So if you'll give me permission for like 5 minutes of soapbox time, but then hopefully we'll bring this thing to an encouraging conclusion. So let's just do some review quickly. The notes that are in your program are basically the notes from 2 weeks ago. You'll notice at the top, I think it says like shame part two or something. I know this is the third week, but I'm just kind of reviewing the notes that I went through at camp meeting. So if you weren't there, this will be the first time you've seen it. If you were, this is a bit of a review. But even before I get there, again, this is part of our Freedom series and dealing with the word shame, dealing with this very important topic, and we'll continue to unpack as we go through this morning. But we started in the first sermon in Genesis. The end of Genesis 2, we see a picture of Adam and Eve in the garden, and the scriptures include a very interesting statement. It says they were naked and unashamed. So we have that little snapshot in Genesis 2. 10 verses later in Genesis 3, the situation has changed. We find them hiding from God. They're hiding from God because they're afraid. They're afraid of God because they are naked. Now, what happened? How did they go from being naked and unashamed at the end of Genesis 2 to 10 verses later in Genesis 3 being very ashamed and afraid of God? So that was that whole focus of that sermon, and we're not going to go through all that again. I'm going to return to that. But then two weeks ago at camp meeting, we talked through some more practical things. I think this definition might be in your program. Dr. Brené Brown says that shame is the intensely painful feeling that we are unworthy of love and belonging. Let me ask you a true and false question, okay? True and false. How would you answer this? Shame is caused by things that we have done or by things that others have done to us. Shame is caused by either things that we have done or things that others have done to us. Does that sound like a true statement? How many of you think that's a true statement? I'm always nervous to raise my hand because I'm afraid it might be a trick question. Well, it sort of is a trick question. It seems like the obvious answer is yes. That's where shame comes from, something that happens, either something we've done that we feel shame or something that's been done to us. I don't believe that's really true. I believe, and you can argue with me about this, but I believe that where shame comes from is the things that you believe about yourself after whatever that thing was happens. Let me say that again. Shame comes from what you believe about yourself after you did what you did or after someone did to you what they did. Does that make sense? I don't believe it's the event that causes shame. It's what the event causes you to believe about yourself. If a person is caught up in sinful behavior, they find they can't really control it. It feels like it's spinning out of control. What do they start believing about themselves? They start believing that they are a sinner, that they are without hope, they're without help, they're never going to get any better, they're just a bad person, they're an immoral person. And when you start agreeing with those things that are actually lies, that's where the shame comes in. I'll just throw that out for what it's worth at this point. So let's go down through. Actually, I just wanted to mention really briefly, next Sunday, Greg Hirschberger is going to be bringing a message on the battle for your mind. And it's going to fit right in here because what you believe about yourself is huge in this whole issue, not only of shame, but of freedom in general. The things that you have begun to believe about yourself can either hold you in shame or can completely set you free. He'll get more into that, and we're going to go more into that in weeks ahead as well. So let's just go through the notes that are in your program. I'll go through these fairly quickly. The first heading is simply the voice of shame. The voice of shame. What does shame say, and what does it say to us in our minds? It says, these are two things, the list could be longer, but shame says, you are not good enough. Whatever it is, whatever lies you believed about yourself, you hear the voice of shame saying, you are not good enough. Another thing shame says is, who do you think you are? It just wants to keep you pushed down, keep you pressed down, believing these lies about yourself. Who do you think you are? I tried to clarify 2 weeks ago the difference between shame and guilt. You might say, well, isn't shame appropriate? Like, if you do something really sinful, shouldn't you feel shame as a result of that? Again, some people might feel this is just a play on words, but I would say the right word is either guilt or conviction. What's the difference? Guilt says, or conviction says, I have done bad, or I've done something bad. Shame says, I am bad. You get that? It's subtle, but so important. Guilt says, I've done something bad, and shame says, I am bad. I gave this challenge to parents to be careful about how you use phrases with your children like, aren't you ashamed of yourself? I mean, I'm sure that I've said that multiple times, and I bet probably every one of us in the room has heard that. Now, again, maybe it feels like I'm picking on words, but rather than saying, aren't you ashamed of yourself, or you should be ashamed of yourself, my suggestion to you would be, as a parent, you would say something like, what you did was wrong. What you did was unacceptable. What you did is displeasing to God. So we need to work on correcting that behavior, to seek forgiveness, to address the issue. Always be careful to separate the action from the identity. Always be careful to separate the action from the identity. No matter what your son or daughter does, no matter what your husband or wife does, no matter what your mother, father, friend, coworker does, try to separate, as you might have need to deal with that issue, try to separate what they've done and who they are. If you begin attacking them as a person, you're just this and you're that, and how could you do that, and I'm so ashamed of you, and aren't you ashamed? All those things are directed at their identity. And that can really cause lasting damage. When that's not really what you're trying to do, I hope anyway, I hope that's what you're trying to do. What you're trying to do is address the activity or the issue, whatever it was. Okay? So that's another, just that minor clarification. Let me hit these next few fairly quickly. Now, the next two points are from Dr. Brené Brown. I've mentioned her a few times. I've been enjoying reading and listening to some of her teachings, but she says that shame's fuel, now that's my phrase, shame's fuel, but the thing that fuels shame, protects it and guards it and keeps it growing and keeps it present, she says there are three things. The first one is secrecy. That thing in your life that you don't want anyone to know about. Anyone to know about. That thing in your family history that you don't want anyone to know about. That desire for secrecy actually continues to fuel the shame that it's created. Secondly is silence. Not only do you not want anybody to know about it, even if someone does happen to find out about it, we will not speak of it. We will not speak of it. Some of you probably grew up in situations where your parents might have said, look, we're never going to talk about this. We're never going to talk about this. We're never going to share this with anybody. This is like a little family matter, and no one's ever going to know about it. Those things fuel shame. They protect it and keep it alive and keep it growing. The third one is judgment. If you either have judged yourself or others have judged you because of whatever this thing is, that fuels shame. It protects it. It guards it. I'm going through these quickly. If you want to hear more of the details on this, the website has that teaching from that morning 2 weeks ago. So if those things fuel shame, what is shame's kryptonite? You know, Superman cannot stand up to kryptonite. He can stand up to everything else, but not kryptonite. So shame can stand up to a lot of things, but not these. What are the things that shame really cannot stand up to? The first one is talk to yourself differently. What does that mean? Would you agree that we are by far harder on ourselves than anyone else is on us? Would you agree? When you make a mistake, the things that you are saying in here are probably 10 times worse than the things that anyone else would say to you. So what Dr. Brené Brown says is to speak to yourself like you would speak to a loved one when they make a mistake, if you have a healthy relationship. Like the loved one, if a son or daughter makes a mistake, you're normally going to say things, hopefully, like I said a little bit ago, okay, that was a mistake. That was not a good thing to do. That caused some pain or whatever, you know, caused some disappointment, but let's get through it. What do we need to learn? What do we need to change? What do we need to ask God for to get through this? But, you know, very few of us talk to ourselves like that. When we make a mistake, we say, how dumb can you be? I cannot believe you did that thing again. Like, what a loser. We say that to ourselves, right? Many of us do, I believe. We're really hard on ourselves. So you need to talk to yourself differently. Now, I would add to Brené Brown's thing of talking to yourself like you would talk to your loved one, a piece of advice that I think is much more critical, and that is start believing about yourself what the Scripture says about you. That's really where you're going to kick shame right in the teeth. Things like you're more than a conqueror. Things like God demonstrated his love in this, and while we were yet sinners, God sent his son to die for us. The verses from Romans, it said, what can separate us from the love of God? And there's a long list of things. And Paul says, none of these things can separate us from the love of God. Jesus Christ said, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. So when you look at the cross, what does that tell you? And I send everybody to this story. Go to Luke 15 and read the story of the father and how he responded to this horrible loser son who had brought shame and humiliation on the whole family. And he comes limping back home. How does the father respond to him in Luke 15? Many of you know that answer. If you don't, please read it. It's a picture of God's love, and you need to believe about yourself the things that the father said to the son in that story that Jesus told. The son had become convinced he was no longer worthy to be called a son. You read that in the story. He came to this decision in his mind that he was no longer worthy to be called a son. That was a lie because his father didn't feel that way. So read that story. If you start believing and saying those things to yourself and over yourself, praying those over yourself, that is going to be a big step in this thing with shame. Number two, another piece of a part of shame script tonight is reaching out. I talked about that more there just to say that to break down the secrecy and ask God to show you one person that you can trust and reach out to. And then the third one is tell your story. Once you find someone that you believe is trustworthy, you can actually start talking about the things that you are so ashamed of. And it is beautiful what can happen next. We had this very thing happen at the men's retreat yesterday afternoon. A man, there was probably like 25 of us sitting around a circle, and one man took that bold step and he opened up about something in his life that he was very ashamed of. And what happened next was beautiful. This whole room of men gathered around him. There was expressions of support. Someone was speaking very clearly a word of prophecy over him. And then we all prayed for him. When you do that, shame has no place to dwell anymore. Because the thing you were ashamed of has now been opened, has been opened up and met with compassion. When that happens, the footing that shame has just been taken away. Okay? So, again, I just wanted to move through those fairly quickly. I would just repeat what I said that Sunday. When someone says, if someone comes to you and says, I'm about to tell you something I've never told anyone before, if that ever happens to you, please know you are standing on holy ground at that moment. What you say next can either be a huge step forward towards healing, or it can be a huge step backwards, pushing that person deeper into their shame. So when someone says that to you, I'm about to tell you something I've never told anyone else, breathe a prayer in that moment and say, God, no matter what they say, I want my words to be words of compassion. You don't have to say, oh, that's no big deal. It's okay. I'm not talking about that. Just say that, yes, that is very difficult. That is very painful. I understand. But you have to know the way God feels about you. You have to know there's a way out of this. You have to know that there's healing. You have to know that there's hope. If you say those words, you're going to help that person take a huge step forward. For me, talking about these things is one thing. But as we said last week, we want to continue to involve stories at Living Hope that you can actually hear. And so Denise, I'm going to ask you to come on up. Denise has consented to share an overview of her story. I know you could talk a long time, but Denise's story and some of my conversations with her were actually one of the seeds that launched this whole series for me. I don't think I ever told you that, but okay. So there were like a couple things, all sort of unrelated, that just kind of were coming my way about shame, about shame, about shame. And as we were in this series of freedom, I'm like, we've got to deal with this. So let's see, this is still turned on, so here, I'll move my stuff out of your way. So, do you want to hold this, or probably easier to hold it? Put it here? Now, let's see if we can.
Years I've kept two huge protective walls up around me. The one said, if you don't know, you can't judge me. The other said, if I don't let you in, you can't hurt me. I'm going to try not to cry, but don't count on it. I kept people out. I would ignore you, fight with you, slam doors in your face, just for simply saying hello to me or trying to get close. Sharing my story today is tearing down the walls, and it's another step in my healing. My parents separated shortly after I was born and divorced before I was three. Most divorced parents fight about getting the children. You know, I want them, no, I want them. My parents did not. They fought over who had to take us. They both had new families by the time I was 3 years old and decided that was the family they wanted. So what I call the original four, which I am the youngest, was passed back and forth between the parents every few months. It wasn't like a year here, year there. It was a couple months and I'm done, take them. That continued for 5 years. So from 3 to 8, I was in this huge turmoil of not belonging, not knowing where I would wake up. During that time of those 5 years, my dad married 3 times. An example of one of the living arrangements, I was with my dad. He got married. His wife did not want us there. We were moved to the basement. I stayed in the basement with my older brothers and sister for everything except to sleep. We'd walk up the steps to get our meal at the top of the steps and take it back downstairs. Soon afterward, she said she had enough. We went back to my mom. During those first 8 years, that I was with my mom, I was molested by an uncle. This started as an infant. I found out a few years ago, I confronted my dad on some things, and I found out that my dad knew. And his response was, "You lived with your mom, that was her problem." I confronted my mom, my mom's response was, "I needed a babysitter." So they knew what was happening. At 8 years old, my mom told my dad to take us permanently or we would go to foster care. She no longer wanted us at all. I did not see my mom for the next 5 years. The original four were permanently split up from then, and I did not see the older siblings for the next 5 years. The older two went to my mom's parents, which they then, in turn, had nothing to do with my mom. My brother, who was a year older than I, and I went and lived with my dad, and he lived with his parents. Now, my dad is the second oldest of 10 kids, so I have an aunt that is a year older than me. So I was thrown into this family. I was told that that was not my home, and I definitely was not included as such. I did not do family things with them. If I walked into a room, I was told to leave. Everyone got quiet, and they waited for me to go through. This is where I learned to isolate. I lived that way for 4 years. At the age of 12, I moved with my dad and my brother, and I was very excited, like, we are finally out. I can finally feel normal. But shortly after moving, I came in from school one day, and my brother was gone. I had no idea where he was. My dad's response was not to worry, not to call the cops, not to look for him. It was, "Let's celebrate. It's just you and me now, kid." I found out a year later when I snuck to meet my mom that my brother had left and gone back to her. My dad is an alcoholic, so most of the time I was left completely alone. I went without basic needs in the house. There's times I opened the refrigerator, there was nothing. Alcohol was definitely more important. I can say I never ate lunch in school. There was no money for lunch, for school lunch. There was no phone in the house for an emergency. Each year he would go on vacation, and while he went on vacation, he sent me to a relative's. I've never been on vacation with my dad. At the age of 13, I was raped by the relative I was left with. The times I did see my dad, he would tear me down. He would humiliate me, and I will tell you a few examples of the nicer things. he would put me down for things I had no control over. If I was sick and throwing up, I was trying it to keep him from going out and drinking. He would tell me, "Your mother is ugly, and you look just like her." His favorite line was, "You're my fourth favorite child, my second favorite daughter." He made it very clear it was a burden to his lifestyle. I was also told, don't tell anyone how you live. And it wasn't so that he didn't get in trouble. His words were, "No one cares about you. They will not help." Issues don't end when you get away from it. I still struggle with feeling like I don't belong or I'm wanted. I'm still more comfortable with isolating myself. And this is a major struggle even among close friends. Pastor Ron challenged me about 2 years ago during an Alpha class, right, Alpha class, to say one good thing about a father. And I sat in silence. I had nothing to say. At the women's retreat earlier this year, the last day, I was sharing with Carol Esch some things that the Lord was saying to me and doing. And while I was sharing, she simply states, "The Lord says you're his favorite daughter." This wouldn't register in my brain. I was so taught that I was unimportant. I was last. I was nothing. So I said to her, "What did you just say?" She repeated it, and I freaked out. I just kept screaming at her, "You don't know what you just said. You don't know what you just said." And she's going, "What'd I say?" Like, she got startled. Like, "What'd I say? I don't know." Once it registered what the Lord just told her to tell me, I just could not control laughing. I just started laughing hysterically. So how did I cope with growing up this way? Well, alcohol and drugs were readily available. And at the age of 8, I started using both. I would smoke pot. I used hash. I smoked crack. I smoked PCP. I never used a needle. And I never snorted anything, and only because, those that know me know, my nose does not function like normal nose. It's been reconstructed. It's all plastic. At the age of 15, my dad moved out with his girlfriend and her little children and left me completely alone. So I would see him about every 2 or 3 months, or I would come home and there'd be some money laying on the table, but he wasn't there. My house became the party house. Drugs. I began to deal drugs. I began to charge for parties at my house just to make money. At the age of 16, I got arrested. I told the officers to lock me up. Life would be better in jail than where I live now. I said to the cop, "Please do that. Just don't call my dad. Just do it, whatever." Instead, he called my dad. It was a very quiet, not a word spoken, the radio not on, silence in the car. He dropped me off at my house. He went about his business. We got our court papers. I got my court papers. As the one to appear in court, he picked me up, took me to court in dead silence. His only comment came after I appeared before the judge and pled guilty, and my father said to me, "Frame that. It better be the only one you ever get." After standing before the judge, I settled down some, but not completely. 6 months later, there was a townwide drug bust and a warrant for my arrest. I can share that with you today because statute of limitations has run out, and I never got caught. I was good at hiding, running from the cops. At 17 years old, my dad shows up, says to me, "Pack your stuff today. You're moving with me tomorrow." He now wanted to be daddy. I was a junior in high school. I was not allowed to drive, have a job, and I had to be home by 8 p.m. So he was taking me back to a little girl. One good thing is I kept my grades up. I was a straight-A student all through school. I graduated early, and shortly after graduation, I became pregnant. Matter of fact, 1 month after graduation, I became pregnant. And I thought this was the best news in the world because I could get out of his control. So after drinking for 17 years, other than when I was pregnant, I quit instantly in April 1991 when my brother was killed by a drunk driver. I continued to use drugs until I met Jesus in 2001. Since then, I've been battling what I labeled rejection. I would read on it. I would try to get counseling on it. Nothing worked for the past 13 years. Then I went to St. Croix. The opportunity came up for me to go through a class called Freedom from a Wounded Heart. I thought there is no way to cover 50 years of pain in 5 days. There were 13 sessions, two or three per day, to get them completely in. So I was given a schedule of what subjects would be what day. Each session was 45-minute video and a discussion with the counselor. But we would not deal with things. I had to list the wound and the lie that went with it, and we would renounce everything at the end of the week. Rejection was scheduled for Thursday, and I was positive that was my only one huge issue, the one thing I struggled with. So I went to a couple of the girls on my team and said, please pray for Thursday. Digging up all this pain is terrifying me. I didn't mention any other day. I didn't mention any other subject. So Wednesday afternoon, we were covering shame. Before we began, the counselor would always say to me and someone else in the room, will there be any issues? I confidently said, no. I have no shame. I nailed what I've done to the cross, and I don't walk in shame from any of it. By the time the video was over, I was crying uncontrollably. I said something I have never said, felt, or even thought before. I looked at the counselor and I said, I do not have shame. I am shame. That is why my parents didn't want me. Others just hurt me. They were ashamed of me, and they're ashamed to be seen with me. The counselor said, we'll deal with this immediately. So we began to pray and renounce the lies that I had already listed as far as I thought were rejection. It's hard to describe what happened, but like this tearing came from my gut. I could feel things being absolutely torn from the walls of my gut. And then I began to choke. Like it was coming up through my throat. And I seriously thought I was going to throw up on the counselor's couch, right on the spot. I couldn't get my breath. I couldn't. It was a weird, strange feeling process. By the time we were done, all thoughts and feelings of shame were gone. I felt emptied of that, and I completely filled of God. Thursday's rejection session, I had no reaction. I took no notes. I had no issues. Rejection was not my lie. Shame was.
I said a few minutes ago that when someone shares with you something that they've not shared before, now very few people have heard that whole thing in its entirety.
No one's ever heard.
No one's ever heard the whole thing. So now, you and I are in the place that I described. We're in this moment on holy ground. And how you and I respond to Denise moving forward is going to help her take a huge step forward, or the opposite is possible. Now you might ask, like, why would you put this poor woman through this? To ask her to tell her story to a room full of people. There are multiple answers to that, but the first one, and I think the most important one is, I believe, Denise, that this is a very significant part of your healing.
Yes,
so it's first and foremost about you. One of the men shared that testimony yesterday, that when he really opened up and told his story, his level of freedom went way up after doing that. Secondly, I am almost certain that there will be some of you in this room that can identify with, at least in principle, to Denise's story. And this may be someone you can talk to, or at least you've heard a testimony of what I said earlier, that God can actually take things that seem impossible to find hope in, and he can actually do that. So thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being transparent with us. Yes, thank you, Denise. Like I said, and Denise and I were talking this week, if you look at statistics, her story, or components of it, are not nearly as rare as we might like to think. And there, it is likely that there are a number of you in this room right now that share with certain components of her story. Now, I've really been struggling with how to touch on this particular piece of this issue, and I will do so fairly briefly, but it is impossible to talk about shame without acknowledging how often sexual mistreatment or sexual misconduct is one of the core parts of the story. I mean, it's just so many of us have experienced it. And by saying us, I don't include myself in that. I'm thankful that I have been spared of that portion. But I know many of you would share part of that story. So there's so much that could be said. But I felt what the Lord led me to was just again to go back to Genesis, where we see these two snapshots. You see a man and woman in the garden, naked and unashamed. And then just a short time later, you see a man and woman in the garden hiding from God. I've been asking myself this question for years. What happened? What happened in that moment when Adam and Eve sinned? Like, if you take note, the thing that they're afraid of God for is not the fact that they ate the fruit. Adam didn't say, I hid and I was afraid because we ate the fruit. You notice he didn't say that? He said, we were afraid because we were naked. Now, something happened in that awareness of good and evil. You remember the fruit they ate was from the tree of good and evil. Something happened in that moment. Their eyes were opened, I think, to not only the beauty of the naked body, which up until that point, I believe that's all they had experienced. They had experienced the beauty of God's creation. My sense is, my hunch is that in that moment, their eyes were also opened to now this sinful aspect of sexual desire, lust, temptation. I don't know. This is such a mystery to me in many ways. But I just want to say this, and I want to say this to everybody, but really focusing on the youth, because I want you to hear this. There was a time in this country, and to be candid, I don't think I lived through much of it. I'm a little bit young, but there was a time in this country where the society's ideas and thoughts about intimacy between a man and a woman were based on this book. And the things that this book says were generally accepted in the school, in the government, in the community. They were accepted. You have been raised in a society where that is long gone. It's long gone. If someone says now that they believe what the Bible says about God's design for male, female, and intimacy between a man and a woman, you're called all kinds of crazy things. One of them, of the nicer ones, is just, man, you are old-fashioned. You are out of touch. Like, what rock did you crawl out from under? If we would agree this morning that one of the goals, if you will, of the Christian life, the Christian experience, is to the greatest degree possible, to go back to what Adam and Eve had before the fall and to experience that in our lives. Would you agree that that is a goal of the Christian life? I don't know that we'll ever achieve that fully, but Adam and Eve had an open and intimate and transparent relationship with their Creator through Jesus Christ and the blood of Jesus Christ. That is possible again. It won't be exactly the same because sin has entered the world. We have attained a knowledge of good and evil, but that relationship that they had is what we are seeking and what I think largely we can experience. Now, I never saw this quite this way until this morning. And I know I don't want to overstate this, but I really believe that Genesis 2:25 lies at the core of all sexual dysfunction, abuse, pain, shame. Now that's a big statement. What does Genesis 2:25 say? It says, the man and his wife were both naked and they felt no shame. The man and his wife were both naked and they felt no shame. What did the verse before that say? The verse before that says, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. God's design of the male and female bodies, God's design and intent for intimacy between a man and a woman is described, I believe, in those two verses. A man will leave his father and mother. He will be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. Marriage is the making of one flesh between a man and a woman. When that happens, when this happens in this sequence, this a man is joined to his wife. There is a commitment of marriage. There is a coming together. And then they become one flesh. And that doesn't just mean physically. It refers to that, but there's a man and woman, a husband and wife become one flesh in every way. Then you have a situation where husband and wife are naked and unashamed. What happened in Genesis 3 is that the knowledge of good and evil have messed that all up. And in the society that you're living in, everyone, almost everyone, has convinced themselves that the intimacy between a man and a woman can happen anytime, anywhere. It's been completely disconnected from this, a man being connected to his wife, the two becoming one flesh, and being naked and unashamed. We have people all over our planet that are living in brokenness and shame and addiction and lust and the worst things that have come out of this knowledge of good and evil, because we have thrown away God's pattern that says a man is united to his wife, the two become one flesh, and they are naked and unashamed. Read those two verses. All of the dialogue that swirls in our society today about sexuality, about all of this stuff, read God's recipe in two verses. A man is united to his wife, they become one flesh, and they are naked and unashamed. You might say, Pastor Ron, that sounds really narrow. Like our society has matured, we move way beyond that. We have moved way beyond that. I don't believe it's a sign of maturity. I believe it's a sign that we've turned away from God's work. And the clear definition that he gives, Jesus in the New Testament reinforced this when he said, a man will be united to his wife and they become one flesh. Jesus restated in the New Testament what is stated in Genesis. So if someone tells you that Jesus never touched the issue of marriage or God's design for marriage, that's wrong. he affirmed clearly what Genesis says. That right there was my soapbox, okay? But if you guys and all of us can get this picture of God's design for marriage, God's design for intimacy, we would start to see how so much shame and brokenness is from the breakdown of what was going on there in the garden. And it's plagued the world ever since. It's plagued the world ever since. So, back to the issue that we're speaking of. Specifically, the issue of shame. What do you say? Other than God can redeem any situation, every situation, and take something that is dust and make it beautiful. We have to change this. Oh, there it is. When did that picture change? I must have bumped this. Some time ago? Anyway, we have to end on that picture and not the one that was up first. I used that phrase two Sundays ago. One of Denise's things that she really stressed with me was one of the big steps for her was simply identifying that shame was really what she was dealing with. It was really shame. It wasn't rejection. It was shame. And she said just that realization began to open that door. And if this is you this morning, if something she said has touched you, if something has that we've said has touched you over these past several weeks, my desire is for you to be able to find someone you can trust, someone that you can tell your story to have someone meet that with compassion and to realize that, you know what? I've believed a lot of things about myself that aren't true. I've believed a lot of lies about myself that simply aren't true. When Carol said to Denise, "You are God's favorite daughter," that was true. Because he feels that way about all of you. Don't let that make you feel less because Denise is the favorite, but God feels that way about all of you. And I know some of you might think, oh, that's what all pastors would say, but that is truly how God feels about you. So let's do this. Ray and Jess, I think wherever you guys are, you are going to come back up again. I want them to sing the song one more time, the song Beautiful Things. And this time, what I'm going to invite you to do is stand and sing along. You've probably at least got the feel of the chorus, but I want you to declare with your mouth, if you are able, declare with your mouth what this word says, that you make beautiful things out of dust, you make beautiful things out of us. There is nothing, no situation that God can't redeem in your life. After the song, then, we're going to make available a time of ministry. But let's go ahead. Let's stand. Let's just stand as we declare these words together. All things out of the dust.
You make beautiful things out of the dust. You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of us. All around, hope is springing up from this all ground. Out of chaos, life is being found in you. You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of the dust. You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of us. Oh, you make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of the dust. You make beautiful things. You make beautiful things out of us. You make me new. You are making
by God's Spirit, your faith may have gone up in that belief this morning. I'm just going to mention these briefly. This was an insert that I used at camp meeting. Some things to say. Remember I said the things you say or believe are very important? There's a list on here of say these things. Things like, I am not my past. Things that I have done and things that have been done to me do not define me. They are my experiences, not my identity. There's other statements like that. And then there are some suggestions on here of things to pray to break free from this thing called shame. So there are just a pile of them here in the front, on the right and on the left, on the stage. If you didn't get one of these, you would like one, please grab it. We're going to dismiss here in just another minute or two. A reminder to parents that you're going to look for your students there out in the parking lot, your students that are in the classroom wing. But we want to make, again, this morning, an opportunity for anyone to come up for prayer related to this issue or for any other matter. But Molly will join me. Jan Sharon, would you be available to join us? I've asked Denise whether she would be willing to stay up front and just speak to you or even pray with you. If there's someone here who's really connected and you want to talk to her, you want to talk to her because she's going to understand what you're feeling. She's going to be up here. And then Claudia is going to join me. Claudia is you don't want to let her go, huh? Well, you can come up with her. But Claudia agreed to join me. For any of you younger, I mean anybody But if someone connects a little better with Claudia, she'll be available. And then, let's see, where did Susan go? Susan, are you still here, or did she leave the... Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I knew you came from that direction, so I'm like, where did Susan go? Would you be available also? So I want to have several women up here, because I know, unfortunately, that especially some of the things we talked about this morning are very difficult and have been very difficult and have been experienced by women. So Claudia will be here, Susan, Denise will be here, and then my wife and I and Jan Sharon. So, Father, I know that this series has stirred up some stuff, and I know that it's been painful, especially for people who are walking through this. God, it's never been my intention to hurt someone as a result of this discussion, but believing, God, that the things that hurt are things that you want to touch and that you want to deal with. So God, whether it's coming up for prayer here, or whether it's maybe thinking of a relative or friend that they know, trust that they can talk to, whatever it is, God, I long to see, and it's our heart here at Living Hope, to see people set free, to see people transformed, to be able to walk away from the shame that holds them in prison and walk into joy and freedom. So we ask for that today and every day. God, bless this body, I pray, in the name of Jesus. Amen. All right, so I just ask the rest of you to be respectful of the ministry time. If you need to go get a student, you can do that. And let us pray with you this morning.